If in my high moments I have done some good, offered some service, shed some light, healed some wounds, rekindled some hope, or stirred some warmth of apathy and indifference, or in any way along the way helped somebody, then this campaign has not been in vain.
Welcome, Aylin Perez, all the way from Doha, Qatar. Did I say that all correctly?
Yeah, that's perfect.
And with a name like Perez, you are certainly not from Qatar.
No, of course not. I'm actually South American. I'm Peruvian.
Oh, really? Mi cuñada es Peruvian también.
Oh, that's so sweet. But like, we're all over the world, so it's really cool.
My sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law.
Yep. So you grew up in Peru. I think the city was Lima.
Lima, yes.
How long did you spend time there? Were you there all the way through high school and then through your after?
I spent in Peru 22 years, but usually I go to visit my family in the States. So I spend winter and summer with them in California, and then I went back to Peru for college.
What part of California are they in?
Sacramento.
Oh, wow. That's funny. My last guest I just spoke to is from Sacramento. It's interesting. What did you major in college in Peru?
I'm a pastry chef.
Are you still into cooking?
Yeah. I still cook, but I mean, like, I'm a vegetarian, so that's why I went for pastry and baking instead of, like, cooking.
The Peruvian chicken is such a staple.
And like chicken, beef, fish, we have a lot of fish. Like everything is good there, you know.
Potatoes. Oh, my sister-in-law, if I go back to New York when I visit my family, they're all there. It's like I'm ready to put on like about 5 to 10 pounds. I already know when I go back.
Well, like for sure, it always happens. That's good.
It's an expression of love.
Of course. I mean, like, if you go to Peru and you don't gain weight, or if you eat Peruvian food and you don't gain weight, they don't love you enough.
That's so funny. You go to school and you graduate as a pastry chef. What happens after that? Because I need to connect the dots here to how you ended up in Doha, Qatar.
Well, the thing is that before going to baking school,
yes,
I was a couple of years in medical school because I always been driving into like health and wellness. But the thing is that I started doing yoga when I was in my senior year of high school.
Where did you practice? What was the setting?
In Lima, there is a studio called Lima Yoga. It was so pretty, and I began just as a summer thing, you know, like the studio was like really cozy and I just loved it because I felt that like it was something new. And at the same time, I wanted to improve my flexibility because, like, as a like quick background, I used to do track and field for, like, many years. But when I was a really kid, I was a gymnast.
Okay, I get it. So you wanted to open up your body and
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to try the experience because, like, I always heard that it was really good for your body, for, like, your muscles. But I never realized that it was going to be such a life-changing experience.
Yeah, so what was your first class like? You go into the studio and you have no idea what to expect. You just hear that it's good for you, but you're not quite sure how it's going to affect you. Were you nervous?
I mean, the first class, I remember it was in 2010. So it's been 80 years already. It was a power yoga class. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was so warming. Like when I arrived, she was like, "Oh, let me walk you to the studio." And I was like, "Oh, it's really my pleasure."
That's so cool. That's how it should be.
I didn't stand in the front row. I went back in the beginner area.
Of course.
And then, like, I realized that I could do many of the things. You know, so I was like, "Oh, like maybe this is for me."
Right, from an asana perspective, I'm sure your gym's background helped.
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of the asana practice, I just found it so good. Like, you feel like it's relief, But when I went deeper into the practice, I realized that it sounds a bit like awkward, but my hips are tight. Even though like I can do some things, like I know that my hips were really tight, and it was really connected with like emotional things rather than like my body itself.
Yes.
And that's something that I learned during the process.
Mm-hmm. What was your event, your main event, when you practiced gymnastics?
Well, like, I was just a kid, you know, I was like 6 or 7. Oh, so, like, okay. So it was just like a, like, it's not kindergarten, but like, it was like a child thing. It was like thing for my school.
Okay.
So I just learned to do like flips and stuff and like, you know, handstands and jumping.
What did you find once you started going to this yoga studio and this new sensation of your hips opening up, which was flooding with different emotions? What did you find the emotions to come with? Like, you know, what was surfacing for you?
Well, like, it didn't really come straight away. It took me a while because after being in medical school, I was not feeling really happy about my decision. Because I just felt it was not my thing. And I started going more into my practice because it felt that after each session, I was finding more answers. And I thought I was like going a bit crazy, you know. But I started attending a lot of workshops. And like one of the main breaking points of my yoga journey was a workshop called Finding Your Dharma. So like is like
Your path.
Your purpose. Yeah, your path, your purpose. And I remember that, like, after that workshop, I questioned a lot, like, if I had made the right choice. Because sometimes we go, like, for the safe things instead of, like, for what really, we really, like, feel like doing, even though it's not so, like, clear the path, if you know what I mean?
I do.
But but I just felt that I had to have the guts for standing for the things that made me happy and, like, you know, like passionate about it, instead of just going for the safe path.
So let me ask you, let me rewind a little bit before Pastry Chef, right? Like that you did because you liked it. But before that, you were set to go to medical school. Was that something that was coming from your family or a status that you thought you had to achieve?
Well, like the thing is that I was always like a really good student. Mm-hmm. And I finished high school really, really young. I finished like bachelor when I was 15.
15?
And it was, it might, like, my family never put any pressure on me, but the one who had like really, really like a lot of pressure on myself was me.
Right.
Because I was especially driven for helping people with cancer because a lot of people in my family have cancer. So I was like, no, I need to be a doctor for helping like all the people that is like going through this and stuff. But I mean, it wasn't really the way because I never failed any topic, but I just didn't feel like it was feeling me, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think a lot of times, and this happened to me when I entered situations that perhaps were the safe route, right? I felt very closed up in my chest, a tightness in my chest. I felt like I would get headaches. And that was before I found yoga. And when I found yoga, I found it was a way to alleviate some of that. And then not only physically alleviate it, it would help bring me to answers and to show me a path that existed and that I was possibly on the wrong path. And that's why I was feeling so much of these signals physically and mentally.
Yeah, I completely understand you. Like for me, for example, I used to feel like a lot of like, not shivers, but like my stomach used to hurt really bad when I was overthinking things that I knew the answer, but I didn't have like the courage enough for standing like for the answer.
Yeah.
So, I stopped to baking school because I really liked it, but at the same time, I had endometriosis. I don't know if you've heard about it. Like,
I have actually, just because we have a lot of listeners who may not have heard about it, and I only heard about it recently from a past guest, can you maybe give some much as you can into it?
Yeah.
So we understand.
So like, just to sum it up, it's a really common disease between women, like actually 1 in 10 have it. And it conditions you to other, like to further types of cancer, but it's the main cause for infertility. So the thing is that the detection is a bit like of a hassle because you need to go for a surgery. Otherwise, you will never have like the proper diagnosis.
Wow.
So the thing is that I had my first surgery when I was in medical school, and after that, I just, you know, like it starts to mess up your immune, like your immune system, yeah. like your energy levels go low. Like I stopped doing so much sports. So anyway, the thing is that I swapped to baking because I really needed something that was going to bring me up because I had to go through like really hard treatments. I even had to go to the States for getting treatments.
Wow.
So the thing is that what pushed me to have my first yoga training was my first treatment because it was an induced menopause and I was 19.
Yeah.
So
you're not supposed to have that at 19 for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is that I went to my first training and you know I learned so many things about like not only like the practice but like I learned how strong and powerful can your mindset be because it made me have a daily habit of meditation, of concentration, and like
yeah.
I remember that when I started like having my daily practice, I focused a lot on hip openers because it's your main point of safety and, you know, like your roots.
Yes.
So, oh my gosh, I remember that sometimes I was just practicing and I just started crying all of a sudden.
Oh, I know. So, I've seen it in classes that I've taught, and if I'm telling the truth, it's happened to me as well, as a man even, it can happen with your hips.
And even like, you know, like hip openers make you so, so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But the more I started going like into it, the more relieved I felt. And at the same time, it helped me a lot to have a positive attitude during the treatment. So the thing is that during my second surgery, like I barely had stuff. Like there was only like a minimal thing. And the doctors were really surprised because they were like, oh, like, what did you do? And I was like, well, like, I started doing my yoga practice. Like,
you're like, hey, you ever seen pigeon? How about frog?
Yeah. So I was telling them, like, you know, I did like daily meditation. I was trying to do my practice as much as I could. And I just stuck to it. I decided to like make it like part of my life. So that really healed me a lot. So like that's why when they asked me like, what did you do? Because like, you know, something that I learned in medical school is that the attitude towards your treatment, it's what is going to determine if it's going to be successful or not.
Yes.
So the thing is that I embrace each stage of my life because it taught me specific things that now help me as a yoga teacher.
I love it. You know, and consistency is such a big thing that in order to get to the true beautiful byproducts of yoga outside of just the physical asana practice, right? To experience the peace and the calm and the other limbs of yoga, you have to be consistent because whether you're planning for those to show up in your life off the mat or not, they will show up, but only if you're consistent. You'll receive all the fruits of the practice.
Yeah, and you know, like, it's amazing how it can actually change your life because even if you start doing yoga for being flexible, or I have a lot of like yogis here who started doing yoga because they wanted like to just stretch, and now they like change a lot of habits, you know, and they're like, oh, like I don't know, like my body is like rejecting something that are not so good for myself, and I was like, yeah, because I mean, like the asana. Well, the thing is that just for not like making it long after. Sure. After 2 years, I decided to go to India for having an Ashtanga training. It was going to be my 200 hours. So I went to Mysore. Like, it was so fun because in that moment, I was, well, yeah, I was 21. So, yeah, I'm listening to this. Yeah, I was 21. So I decided to go to India. And the thing is that I took Qatar Airways, and that's how I made a layover in Doha. And it was a long layover, long as 17 hours.
Wow.
So the thing is that I didn't know that some airlines in Asia, especially in the Middle East, if you have a layover that is longer than 8 hours, they arrange the hotel for you for free. This is for all the listeners.
Wow.
So yeah, they arranged a hotel for free, and I was here alone, you know. I was like, oh my gosh, so I'll try to explore the city as much as I can. So in that moment for me, like, Doha was huge. Like, it was so different and stuff. And now that I've been living here for 2 years, believe me, it's like so small, you wouldn't believe it.
I have a friend that works for Qatar Airlines.
Qatar Airways?
She's from Brazil, and she lives in
Doha. Really?
Yeah, she lives in Doha, and I think, like, Doha is a city that is, like, very, you know, it's more metropolitan with a lot of younger people, correct?
I mean, like, Doha is probably the main city that you have. There's no more than 6 cities, if I'm not wrong.
Right.
In the entire country. So yeah, we're a really small country. But the thing is that, well, like, that's how I got to Mysore. I finished my first training, and then the same year, after 3 months, I decided to go back for finishing, like, the 500 hours. So I took the same route, like, Qatar Airways.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is for me, you know. So I applied for a job here. I was working with a company, and then I became a freelancer.
What made you want to work in Qatar? Like, what was the root of it all?
I don't know. I just had a feeling for this country, and it's so safe. Like, I really like it.
That I've heard. This is true, because crime is punished so severely that it is safe. But is it is it also because of the pay is so good, and you know, they take care of you because they have all that oil money?
I mean, like, the thing is that when I moved here, I was not really aware of the payments, and, like, the company that where I was working, I mean, like, they were not really going to give me, like, my salary was not like, wow, I should move straight away. I just wanted to, like, come here and start, like, living by myself, and, like, you know, I just wanted, like, a bit of adventure.
Yeah.
But then I had, like, such a last year I went back to Peru, and I didn't know if I was going to come back, because, like, after I resigned the company, I had a surgery, had an ankle surgery, and I didn't know if I should come back. So the thing is that, like, all my clients were like, come back, please, come back. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, for me, like, each person is just, like if they were, like, my little kids, so I just cannot just, like, drop them. So I came back, and, like, it made me so happy to see that, like, they were still, like, trying their best, and yeah. Like, what I really like from this country is that, besides the safety, I mean, like, I come from South America, so, like,
yeah,
any grade of safety is really appreciated.
Yeah, I know, I've heard.
The thing is that, what I also like is the weather. I mean, like, it sounds crazy because it may reach, like, 50 degrees Celsius, but I am so into summer, so, except for humidity, that's the only, like, but the other things I'm fine.
Well, okay, so what's their take on yoga? Because as far as a Muslim country, I would be curious to their view on it.
Well, like, there's group classes who are mixed, but it's mainly for people who is not local. There's ladies-only classes, and there's at-home classes.
Okay. That makes sense.
So in that way, like, everything is going to be according to, like, the traditions and the culture, for just, like, not going against anything.
So how do you dance around that? Like, what's one thing that you have to be very careful about or mindful of?
I just need to respect a lot each person's privacy. For example, like, if I'm with a lady in a one-on-one session, we cannot be posting pictures or things like that.
Sure.
You know? So yeah, like, for me, there's not of a big, like, there's no problem in terms of that.
But there's no co-ed classes.
There are, but not really for local people. It's mainly for people who are foreigners.
Okay. Do you have to live in a certain part of the city that's just isolated to the farm?
No. Like, it's actually a mixed city, you know? Like, my best friends are Qatari.
Okay.
So, like, there's no problem. And the thing is that I feel that, like, Latin America and Arab culture, we share a lot of things in common. Like, we are really family oriented. We are, like, you know, like, warm. So, like, I find a lot of things similar to where I come from.
Really? That's shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, not in terms of, like, dress code and stuff.
Well, do you guys have arranged marriage, or do they have that there?
Yeah, there's still arranged marriages, but things are changing. I mean, like,
And the women can drive there?
Yeah, women can drive.
No, I say that because in Saudi Arabia.
In Saudi Arabia, they cannot drive, I know.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, I mean, like, it's really cool, you know, like, it's really interesting, because, like, whenever I go back to Peru, my friends make me a lot of questions, like, oh, you need to wear the black thing, and I'm like, well, like, I wear it when I feel really lazy of, like, dressing up, you know, so.
Do you have to wear the hijab when you go out?
No, like, I mean, the abaya, that is, like, the black coat, you can wear it, like, whenever you want, or if you don't want to wear it, you don't wear it, but for local women, they have to wear it. It's like part of the tradition.
Okay, but you can go with your hair exposed.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I'm just trying to feel it out, because I know people from Saudi Arabia. I used to teach a lot of people from Saudi, and I know how strict it is there. I know people know people from UAE, and that's its own thing. And then Qatar, I don't really know about. So I'm just.
So Saudi is more strict.
Yeah, yeah.
UAE is a bit more not so strict.
I taught people from there here in the States who would tell me, and Dubai is its own thing. Let's not mistake that all of United Arab Emirates is like Dubai. Dubai is its own thing. It doesn't represent the whole country, from what I was told.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like Western influence here, especially in terms of yoga. Because many of like my yogis, they order their mats online and they go for Lululemon and they love Manduka and, you know, like that kind of things. So it's really nice because many of them are really interested in they're into spirituality.
Yes.
And they love like knowing mantras and meditation and like, you know, it's not a taboo anymore because now it's becoming more frequent and especially for the local community.
Can you om at the end of your class?
Yeah, I can. But like usually I need to check if the person is into doing mantra chanting or not.
Okay. I know how things are. And even here, you know, in America, if you're in the Bible Belt, right, like the Deep South, you would have to be careful.
Really?
Oh yeah, you would have to ask if people are okay with that, because you basically explain to people that it's not a religion and that it's connecting you to a place of stillness, allowing you to connect to your higher power, whatever your higher power is.
Right, exactly. And you know, like now that you mentioned that, like when somebody's asking me like, oh, like yoga religion, I'm like, no, it's not. Like if you open the Yoga Sutras, the definition of yoga, it's like, it's the control of the propensity of your thoughts. And in terms of religion, I'm a Catholic. So, I mean, like, it has nothing to do with, like...
See, I'm a Jew, so they wouldn't even let me near that country.
No way. Well, like, you're the first... No, you're not the first.
But hey, you know what? They're peace-loving people, and they're open and welcoming to everyone, as long as you're not a Jew.
I mean, I have a lot of Jew friends in Peru.
Not in Qatar, though, right?
That's a good question. I will start looking for them tomorrow.
We allow them to come here, but we can't go there. But they're peace-loving, family-oriented people. I know how great it is.
Oh, that's so sweet.
No, I just laugh because it's just such a hypocritical thing, because I taught English to so many people from the Middle East for so long, and we were here in America, so we had honest conversations. And these people are my friends. And they could say things to me here in America, but they can never say these things over where they're from. Okay. But they're peace-loving, family-oriented people.
Definitely. I mean, peace-oriented. Like.
Yeah. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. You got to work there.
Yeah, I know. Everybody has troubles still, but I just aim for having a better world every day.
Yes. Okay, so how have you found the progression of your own yoga practice and your own training, which is 500 hours? You know, I respect that. It's a 500-hour Ashtanga training that you took in Mysore. Are you able to develop an Ashtanga program there?
You know, at the beginning when I started working, just as a pure yoga teacher, well, like, I still do it. Like, I found it so hard to stick to my practice. I was getting drained
How many classes a week were you teaching? Because that's...
Like, per day? You want to know? Like, sometimes 8 or 9. And
holy
my body
crap.
Was broken. Like,
are you
my
kidding
body
me?
Was broken. No, and actually, like, this week I have, like... You know, like, now I have a rule for myself. And my average should not surpass 7. Because otherwise...
A day or a week?
A day.
What? How many classes do you teach in a week?
Depends.
Okay, can you give me like an estimate, an average?
Let me check my schedule right now. Like for this week?
Yeah.
Because the week starts here on Sunday.
Yes. Ironically, that's the same day the week starts for Jewish people.
See, it's like destiny. 30.
Wow. Okay. So let me ask you, as someone that did teach that many classes when I owned studios, I really did, so I can relate. How do you maintain your own practice? Because I really had a difficult time teaching that many classes and maintaining my own practice.
Well, you know, there is a thing that makes everything even more complicated. I mean, it's mainly at-home sessions. So I am driving all over Doha the entire day. But okay. What I've managed to solve is that on my weekends, like for example today, I commit to my practice. And on the other days, there's two options. Or I make like my practice condensed and like specific,
yeah.
Or I do the practice with one of the people of the day.
Sure, yeah.
So I mean, like in terms of Ashtanga, like it's really hard to stick to it, and especially after my ankle surgery.
Yes.
So I mean, like I'm going back, like I'm always in contact with my teacher, and like he always told me to be careful. But after my surgery, like my doctor, my surgeon also practices Ashtanga. He said, like, don't do Lotus at least for half a year. And that was in July.
Yeah.
And I already started doing Lotus last... No, like, in January, yeah. I started doing Lotus. But still, like, even though I finished my physio sessions and stuff, I still feel that my ankle is a bit stiff.
Wow.
Because I couldn't walk for a month. Like, my cartilage had a hole, you know? So they had to reconstruct it.
So can I ask you, the studio... For sure. I'm sorry about that you had to go through that, and I hope that it's progressing. It continues to progress well, as it has, because you said it's progressing faster than the doctor would have thought. The studio that you teach at, is that where you teach most of your classes, or like you said, you drive all over? So
yeah, I don't really teach in a studio.
Okay, so how do you get your students?
Well, like either recommendations. Or the thing is that since it's like big families, if you deliver a class and one person likes it, you potentially have 3 or 4 people from the same family that will try a class with you.
Oh, yeah, I know. When I taught English, it was like I taught everyone's cousin, their brother, the mother, the grandma.
Exactly. Everybody. Even the neighbor. So, I mean, like, I feel that networking is really important, but at the same time, for me, something that, like, it's even more important is the quality of session you deliver. No matter how tired I can be, like my yogis will never realize it. Like no matter how bad that they could be.
Well, you're a professional.
Never realize it. Like, you know, like we're all human. So some days I may be a bit down, but nobody will really realize it. Because
no.
I mean, like, you know, I just feel that like it's like at least the people I'm working with, they look forward to yoga sessions. So I just cannot disappoint them. So
you leave your stuff at the door. And you must, you know, you get it together and you make it happen. My next question to ask you, teaching that many classes, are you giving physical adjustments during the classes? Because that takes a lot of energy out of you.
Well, like maybe you just answer one of my questions, because I was like, why am I feeling so tired if I am not doing my practice almost every day? But yeah, almost all of them are adjustments.
Okay.
Except for the classes that even if I practice with the person, I will always be adjusting, because like those are the pros of like the 101 session.
Yeah.
And the thing is that like they've tried many other yoga teachers and they're like, oh, like, you know, like even though we had a 101 session, this person didn't focus on my alignment. And I'm like, I always try to explain them that, first of all, we need to check your purpose of why are you starting your yoga practice. And second of all, you cannot rush into getting into difficult postures if your body's not prepared.
Yes.
Because that's how people get injured. So I tell them, like, you know, like, okay, like, maybe you cannot reach your toes today, but the most important thing is you need to practice daily, even though I'm not here. Because in that way, your body's going to be, like, pampered for the opening. If you rush, you're going to injure yourself. And that's, like, what people lack from what I'm doing for them.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I mean, you got to approach everyone as an individual. Nobody's the same. And of course, you should also reinforce the fact that when you're not there, that hopefully they would be doing something in between sessions.
I send them a homework, actually.
Do you really? How many times do you see a typical client each week, you know, on a private?
Either two or three.
Is your housing all paid for there?
No, I pay my rent and I pay the car.
Okay. Sometimes it depends, you know, like with English teaching jobs, you get that deal. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, like in many other studios, you have that deal, but since I decided to become a freelancer and I got like a private sponsor, I pay my stuff.
A private sponsor? How does that work, a private sponsor?
I mean, like, it's not a company that it's like allowing me to stay here. It's like a person. So the thing is that for staying in Qatar, legally, you need like somebody.
You have to understand. I'm asking you these questions because I have no idea how this works, and I think a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
So
the thing is that, for example, for going to the States, you need a visa.
Yes.
So there's like different types of visas. So we have almost like not almost like, but almost the same
process.
But the thing is that tourist visa, many countries can get it on arrival. But for staying here, it's a bit hard because you need to go to a company or to a Qatari person that is going to sign like a process for you for saying that like they are in charge, quotation marks, of you.
Whoa.
And not everybody does that. Like company, even like if you apply for a company, it's a long process. I mean, like for me, like it took a while, especially because I'm Peruvian. But the perks, you know.
Sure.
But the thing is that it takes a while. First, like they need to post an application, and the application needs to be approved or rejected. After you have the application approved, you need to go through another process, and then after that process, like you need to go for your medical check, because if you have, they need to check your blood and your lungs. If you have some like inconveniences there, you don't get that resident permit.
People do teach all over the world, and it's fascinating. It's not judgment, yeah. You know. It's just information. It's inquiry, and I truly find it interesting and fascinating.
Yeah. So
I don't know.
Even like the lung X-rays for like double checking if there's anything in your lungs in terms of like TBC or stuff like that.
Yes. Well, they don't want it coming into the country and spreading around. It's okay. I
mean, yeah, because like, you know, the thing is that like people here as a community, it's technically really safe, and there's not many diseases that like in other parts of the world we have.
Yes.
So introducing like these diseases would make like a really big like deal for the entire country, you know.
Yes, of course. So the word that you said, which again, everything I ask you is inquiry. Because if I were to ask you the question that I'm about to ask, I don't know the answer. So this is for real. When you get a private sponsor and they're quote unquote in charge of you, how deep does that go in terms of their control over you?
I mean, it depends. Like mine is just like the friend of one of my clients and he just signed me up. That's it.
But what rights does he have if he wanted to exercise all of the rights of being in charge of you?
Okay, you cannot leave the country without the authorization of your sponsor. Ooh. Either company or like a person.
Holy crap. Doesn't that scare you?
No, because the thing is that if I got this sponsor, it's because my client trusts me. That's okay. Why it's really hard to get a private sponsor.
How long is it for?
The contract is 2 years, but I can renew it. I can extend it, you know?
Okay, so you're doing well teaching there. How long do you intend on staying there? Is it a lifelong thing, or are you going to eventually go back to Peru or the States?
Like, I don't really think I'm going back to Peru so far, but I really want to stay at least until the World Cup, because I'm really excited to see how things are going to come up.
Ooh, is it going to be in Doha?
In 2022.
Oh, that's cool. That'll bring you a lot of clients.
I don't really know about that, because like it's gonna be just like a bit crazy for the entire country. It's gonna be the first time like the World Cup's gonna be hosted by an Arab country,
and soccer or football is so huge with the Arab community. From just teaching them, I remember how excited they would get, and there's so many different leagues. It's bizarre. It's mind-blowing how many different leagues there are.
I know. I really love soccer, and Peru qualified after 38 years to this World Cup. So
that's right.
I
yes,
they can make it.
soccer or football is big in South America too. It's big everywhere, but freaking America, which is
of course,
it's just insane. It's so crazy. So I would like to ask you, what has been? It's a two-part question. What has been one of the biggest joys, right, of teaching there, and what has been one of the more challenging things?
So there was a big cultural shock for me because South America, we are really warm, we're really friendly. Like, you know, sometimes we are too, like, talkative. And it's natural for us, you know?
Yes.
Like, that's how we are, and that's how we are raised, because we don't see anything wrong in that. But, for example, when I came here, like, if you're really talkative to a guy, especially to a local guy, they think you have a crush on them.
Yes. I again, I have experience with this, teaching people here in America, at an institution that had college age and adult age people from all over the world, a high concentration of Arab people or Middle Eastern people mixed in with people from South America, from Europe. And it was just so, I mean, watching the interactions was blowing my mind. Like, you know, like some of them were like 19, like their hormones are raging. It was just insane. Pretty funny.
Exactly. You know, so like, imagine, like, okay, I approach and I'm super friendly and I'm wearing my yoga clothes. So of course, like, it was really hard.
Yes.
So that's why I don't really
yes.
I don't really take guy clients.
Yeah, that's a good
I only have four, and they're like one of them is like the one who helped me with my sponsorship, but they are not young at all. They are like around 50s, and they're super respectful and like polite.
Yeah, I think you're making good decisions.
Yeah, because then, like, imagine, oh my gosh, then they are gonna think that, like, you're their girlfriend, and I'm like, I'm your yoga teacher, sorry about that.
Yeah, so it's a cultural thing. It makes, I get it. And what about one of the rewarding things, one of the most rewarding things?
So I find really, really rewarding when the girls start speaking up and they start opening up for things that are their daily struggles, and struggles that are big and could even like make them be in trouble with their society or culture.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, for example, some of them are so like stubborn in a good way that I admire them, because they need to stand not only against their family but against their entire society.
Yeah.
So for me, that's like priceless, you know, because I mean, like, when you go and give them a class, like, and they start showing you their vulnerability, I mean, like, it's like they're just putting themselves, like, they're like a book for you to read it.
Yes.
And you need to be really picky for opening yourself with someone. So that's something that I really appreciate, because the bond I have with my yogis is like, okay, like, besides the asana practice, I really want to make a change in their lives.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. That's commendable. I like that. That's really cool that you're able to give them that space to open up, not only physically and mentally, but open up from their heart and be a trusted confidant, which is cool.
Yeah, so, like, you know, that's why I really like my job, because I start listening to different things, different stories. And, you know, something that I learned when I moved here is that I cannot be judging people, because
yes,
sometimes, like, we have a different perspective, like, we've been raised in a way, but until you don't put yourself in that other person's shoes, you cannot really have a right opinion of many things.
Of course. We're all not from each other's culture, so we cannot fully understand unless we listen.
Exactly. So still, like, you know, I really like when they ask me a lot about, like, my culture and, like, oh, like, in your country, what do they do? And I explain them, and they want to learn about it. Because, I mean, like, at the end, we're all, like, humans, and no matter where are we from, we will always share something.
Absolutely. It's funny, because I'm going to tell you, I have a lot of experience speaking to my students anywhere from the ages of 60 to 19-year-olds to 25. From Saudi, from UAE, from Iraq, all over the Middle East, Libya. And it's interesting because the perspective, now again, cultural differences, the perspective from the males are that, well, we protect our women, we take care of our women by limiting their rights. But the women, you know, want education and want to be respected and want opportunity, but the men don't quite see it that way. And I think that's where the evolution
starts.
It may take place. I don't know. It's not my job to really work on that. But I just, again, it's not my culture, but I used to laugh when the men would tell me, again, using the example from Saudi, well, we give our women a driver because we love them so much. I'm like, no, you treat them like a freaking hostage. But it's just...
No, it's okay. I'm just laughing.
I said it. Come here and attack me. I don't care. I'm here in America. You can come and find me. I just think it's very... I met so many women that you're okay, you're telling me that you talked to them. And I had the same experience because we were in a classroom, okay? And they were so intelligent and they had so much to offer. And they were able to voice it here in America, but they can never go back and voice it the way they did here, there. And to me, that's a shame because you're putting a limit on someone's potential in their life.
Yeah, that is true. You know? And it's sometimes like a bit sad because not only in terms of women, like some men have a lot of struggles too. You don't want to get married, but your family is making you get forced to get married, and you don't want to get married, but they make you get married.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So I'm like, at this age, you don't really want to get married.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, well, I don't know if crazy is a good word, but it's just different. It's a lot different.
Exactly.
You know, but yeah, anyway, so good for you spreading the yoga love to Qatar.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. And it's been like a pleasure to know you, to like... share a bit of what I do here in the middle of the desert.
Thank you so much, Aylin Perez.